Welcome to the Verified Athletics Podcast. If you're an aspiring college football player and you want to know what schools are really recruiting you and not just sending you bulk mail, sign up for the Verified Watch List, where college coaches can add you to their head coach's top 10 list. Each college only has a limited number of spots, so when you're added to their list, you know that they're serious about recruiting you. You can sign up at verifiedathletics.com, and if you're a high school coach, you can sign up as well and get that information on all of your athletes. If you're enjoying the podcast, take a minute and please support it by encouraging people you know to listen and spreading the good word on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, wherever you're online. Also, subscribe and rate it wherever you get your podcasts. Our guest today is Tim Carey. Tim spent over a decade coaching at the Division I level and now coaches at a prep school, the Taft School, in Watertown, Connecticut. Tim and I coached together for 6 years. He's a great friend. He's probably the smartest coach I've ever had to work with. So let's do it. All right, Tim, welcome to the podcast. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I'm good. How's the season? How's the team?
So far, so good. We started off well. We're 4-0, and we just had a big win last weekend against a school we hadn't beaten in a while. So we're doing well. Kids are playing well.
Well, that's great. Why don't you spend a few minutes and tell our listeners your history, where you're at now, and what's going on with you?
Sure. So I played a little bit of college football and at a school, Fairfield University, and partway through my career, they dropped football. But after I was done, I really wanted to coach and to make a difference in young people's lives, really because I had some great coaches along the way. And so I was hoping to kind of do the same thing. So the first job that I had was as a graduate assistant at Central Connecticut State University, which was a 1AA at the time, I guess FCS now, school in Connecticut. And I worked there for 1 year. The head coach at the time, Tom Masella, was hired after the season at Fordham University. He brought me with him, coached there for 1 year, and worked with the secondary. And then I went and became a graduate assistant at University of Connecticut, worked with the secondary there. And then I went right back to Fordham and coached the secondary for a number of years. And then my last 2 years there, I was a co-defensive coordinator as well. I served as a recruiting coordinator for a good chunk of that time as well while I was there. And during my last year at Fordham, your last year too, my wife became pregnant. We had twins a couple days after the season ended, and I just decided that college football was a great thing, but it didn't provide the balance that I was looking for my family. So I went on from there and found a job at Trinity Pauling School, which is a prep school in New York. I worked there for 2 years as a defensive coordinator and taught. And then from there, I got a job at Taft School, which is in the same town that I grew up in Connecticut. And now I'm doing the same thing, teaching and serving as a defensive coordinator here.
Well, that's great. So, and I actually don't know, because they don't have football anymore, but Fairfield, when you went there, what division were they?
They were what was called, like, I guess it was, 1AA non-scholarship. So
so it's similar to, like, Davidson or Jacksonville or
Marist. Like Jacksonville, Marist, those were teams that we played. Yeah, so it was, it was trying not to glorify too much, and basically it's, the equivalent of Division III football, but they wanted to have Division I basketball there, so.
And when you were at UConn, it was Big East school, right?
Yeah, UConn was in the Big East at that time.
So all your college football experience, player coaching, it's all at the Division I level, but from like the widest range, well, not the widest range, I guess Alabama might be at the very top of that range. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if anyone's selling UConn at being the top of the Division I range, but
maybe not.
But still, I mean, you're talking a team. You guys, when you were there, did you guys win the Big East? I mean, you guys were pretty good, I think.
Yeah, we shared the Big East. We went to three bowl games. We beat Notre Dame. We beat South Carolina. We beat Baylor with RG3. So I was fortunate when I was there. We had really talented teams, and I got to work with some really great coaches who have gone on to, you know, a lot bigger things. But certainly, I think we were better than they've been recently. We were pretty good.
So you've seen a lot of the Division I landscape. I mean, it doesn't that is really the big breadth of it, you know, from top to bottom. So
yeah.
We've so far on my podcast, I've had a couple of coaches on, but they were both Division III school coaches. And you know, you might not really know much about Division III recruiting, but from what you do know, do you think that Division I recruiting is pretty different, you know, from the athlete's perspective, from the coach's perspective?
I think from what I know, I kind of thought of this, and you probably have a better idea about this than me, but I always thought that it was quite a bit different. And I think the thing that kind of struck me was just how wide the net is for a Division III coach, and just in terms of getting, you know, a huge number of names and, you know, really keeping a lot of those kids alive, so to speak, as opposed to a Division I coach where you really try to cut that list down as quickly as possible and zero in on kids. And I don't know if you would say that's accurate or how you felt, but that's, and then I guess from the other side, it's the same kind of thing. If you're a Division III type player, you're probably casting a wide net and you're probably getting a lot of interest even from maybe Division I, FCF level schools, and then all the way down, and you're kind of looking. Whereas, you know, if you're at the very, very top of the FBS kind of ladder of that type of player in Alabama, like you're probably looking at, you know, a 10 school thing. And then, you know, that probably expands down as you get to guys who are going to the FCS. So that's kind of what I thought. And like I said, you probably know better than me, but I was always just amazed when, you know, Division III coaches would talk about like how many kids they would be like recruiting and making calls to like in the winter. I was just be like, wow, that's a lot.
Yeah. Division III school recruiting is brutal for a coach. I mean, and I think the landscape has changed a little bit, but when I did it, the nice part would be that it basically didn't really start when I was doing it. This is about 10 years ago now. It basically didn't really start in earnest until after the season ended. So it was really like doing like a little bit during the season, having some people up for some game visits and, you know, the occasional watching some tapes as they were coming in. But really, like, I was like, it was like full stop, season ends. Next Monday, I'm on the road and I'm gathering the information. I'm recruiting, say, 100 high schools, and I'm going to go and every high school, you know, not every high school has a kid, but half of them have a guy that would be worth, you know, recruiting or talking to at the very least, from a, you know, athletic and academic standpoint. And so like you're really going into almost every of your 100 schools that you're recruiting. And, you know, I think that landscape has changed a little bit now. I mean, Huddle is a game changer, allowing coaches to see so much more from so many athletes so much quicker. Whereas before, I mean, like when I coached Division III, you know, most of the high school coaches I was dealing with, you were talking about DVDs and on occasion VHS tapes. So it was different, you know. But that was a saying is like, you're not really starting until mid November, end of November, early December. And, you know, that made it like, it was intense. You were calling a lot of athletes. You had a big list, but it was over a shorter period of time, where Division I recruiting is really like a year or 2 years of dealing with the same athletes.
Right. But, you know, the one thing I guess I would say about that is, you know, if I think back 10 years ago, that's kind of, you know, when I was at UConn, and man, I can remember, you know, finding some kids after the season, you know, or maybe kind of towards the end of the season. And, you know, some of those guys are like still like NFL guys, you know? So I think even at the Division I level, that landscape's changed. And like you said, I think Huddle is a big reason for that, where, you know, some of those kids were coming from a small school and hadn't really played. And it was, you know, you were only going to make a DVD at the end of the season and then send it out, da, 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 da. So I think, you know, even back then, I think in the Division I level, a lot of that stuff happened post senior year, where, you know, obviously the, you know, USC's and Alabama's, they might've been ahead, but I think even a school like UConn, a lot of that, you know, you want them to see how those kids developed in their senior year, and just the nature of, like you said, kind of the creating of the tapes and how intensive that was and expensive. Like you just didn't make a, you know, a 4-game highlight tape for every kid and send it to every coach in the country, you know?
Yeah. And there's like, there's definitely a pecking order of college programs. Not to say that every athlete in the country would prefer Alabama the most and then some other school the next most. And, you know, not every athlete has the same order of all schools, but there's like a group of schools that get their first pick by and large. And then there's another group of schools that kind of get that next tier. And then there's another group and it keeps on going down. And
right.
And so I think like the earlier the Alabamas and the Auburns and the, you know, Cals and USC's, like the big schools, you know, of the Notre Dame's, they're all getting their classes kind of put together and they're starting to filter out the guys that they're offering versus the ones they're not. Then that opens up the door for the Colorados and the University of Illinois to kind of figure out, you know, the UConn's to figure out where they stand. And then there's like, then the filter down to the Colorado States and the, you know, you go on, UMass or whatever, you go down and down. And then so the earlier one group starts to sort it out, that starts to open up it helps, you know, the coaches at the next level down figure out who it is that is really possible for them to get.
Absolutely.
So I think that now it's like, you know, Huddle, you know, is advancing it for everyone, and then that has a trickle down. So now the Division III coach, for the most part, knows what guys are going to have Division I offers, you know, by the middle of the summer between the junior and senior year. So now it's like, you know, the landscape is out there. These are the guys that are left.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
So I don't know. So from coaching Division I and saying that you think there are some differences that athletes should pay attention to, what do you think an athlete that maybe has borderline Division I potential or at least thinks that they do, what should they be doing to get themselves from where they are as like a good high school player that maybe is receiving some level of interest to an offer?
Oof, good question. You know, I think it's there's a lot of things, and I think, you know, part of it, and I never lose sight of this, but part of it can come down to luck, because you're talking about, you know, kids that are really, probably really similar in terms of skill set and athletic ability. And sometimes that's just being seen by the right person. Maybe it's just being seen by a person who can project you or can kind of see you doing something in the future that maybe somebody else can't. So I think that's part of it. And obviously that piece of it, what I would say, you know, to make sure that you're taking advantage of that luck, if you will, piece of it would be, you know, just getting as much exposure as you can. And, you know, not limiting yourself. So if, you know, if you're dead set on playing at a Division I school, then, you know, get online and get the email address for every, you know, Division I recruiting coordinator, you know, out there and send your tape, you know. And, you know, I think that like just that kind of mentality helps you bring about the luck, you know, which is right. Like I see a person, and I've seen this a million times where, you know, like, you know, you probably remember this at Fordham. I think about, can we say kids' names on here? I guess they're not kids, they're grown men. But, you know, I think about like George Dawson, you know, it's like, if George Dawson didn't go to Fordham, if you weren't with me when we went to Cardinal Hayes High School and you were like, we went to see a different kid and you're like, well, what about this kid? You know, and I was like, well, I never really thought of him. You know, he would have gone to Trinity. Like he was going to Trinity.
Yeah, he ends up being a 3-year starter along those lines at a Division I school, of a team that's winning and going to the playoffs.
Right, exactly. And, you know, and so that's the difference between going to Division III school and getting a full scholarship. And so I think the luck piece, you know, you can make your own luck a little bit by getting as much exposure as you possibly can for yourself. And obviously you want to advocate for yourself, and your high school coach can help do that and all those things. So that's one piece of it.
Let me stop you there for a second. Like you gave me a lot of questions from the things that you said. The first one is, do you really think like emailing college coaches, Division I college coaches, you know, your tape is like a good path? Does that work?
I do, but maybe I'm, I don't know, maybe I'm skewed on this, but I mean, I think that a lot of places have enough of a staff nowadays where they're going to at least take a look at that tape. Now, you're probably better off if you have your high school coach do it.
That's what I was going to say.
That's probably a little bit better. But I think even if you just send it, I mean, if I think back, like, we used to get so many emails, but I mean, I'd at least click on it. I'd at least give you, I'm at least going to give you a couple plays because it's not that much more work for me. And it's just the opportunity to find that kind of hidden gem, you know? But yeah, I do think that a lot of those are going to go unopened. And yes, if you can, and your high school coach is willing and able, then that would probably help, you know, get more of those emails opened and films watched. Definitely. That's probably a good, really good point.
Like, because I know that, like, you and I are probably a little bit more thorough natured than a lot of coaches would be in the recruiting process. I mean, I could think of other coaches that have an email inbox with, like, thousands of unopened emails in them, too. And, like, and some coaches that don't know how to open their email inbox. I mean, we've worked with guys like that, too. And I'm just saying, like, I think that I really advocate for if you're the type of player that's going to be a successful college football player, I can't believe that you wouldn't have a high school coach that would be willing to get on the phone or send out an email on your behalf. Like, if you don't have that, like, how are you, like, what are you doing wrong in your own program where, like, your high school coach won't help you out that way? I mean, maybe you have other thoughts on that.
No, I agree. I'd say that's probably true most of the time. The only kind of exception I would say would be, you know, I think that there's some coaches out there that aren't doing as much as they can for their kids.
That's true.
And I think, you know, some kids, I think a lot of kids probably think they're in that situation. I think a few kids are probably in that situation. You know, and for those kids that are in that situation, then obviously you need to try to find somebody else. And I'll tell you, it's not unheard of. And you could probably speak to this too, to have like an opposing coach. You know, when you're out on the road recruiting as a college coach, to have an opposing coach say, like, hey, this kid over here, da 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 da. And sometimes they may mention that the head coach is, you know, not doing his job. But sometimes they might just say, hey, here's a kid that I think is a good player. So honestly, like, if you're a kid and you're out there and you think my coach isn't helping me, I think you want to try to find an adult. And that might honestly be a coach that you played against.
Yeah, I think the best recommendation you could get is from an opposing team's coach. I mean,
absolutely.
You know, if someone's high school coach recommends their athlete to me, like, well, first of all, if an athlete sends in a film without any, you know, with just from themselves or from their parent, I would say one out of every 100 are someone that are going to be even worth a follow up after watching like the first two clips, as you kind of pointed out.
Right.
If the high school coach sends it, now we're talking like more in like the 1 in 10 range. I don't know. Maybe these numbers are pretty approximated, but I think you get the point.
Yeah, I'd agree.
But if an opposing team's high school coach says to watch someone, and they have the grades, now that's the piece that usually the opposing team's high school coach might not have the full picture on. But and they have the grades, like now you're talking like 1 in 3, 1 in 4, 1 in 2 that this is someone that's totally worth a look and like gonna be a follow up.
Definitely.
Because yeah, high school coaches, they, you know, they're good hearted and they want to do what's right and what's best for their athletes. But they're also they love these kids, you know, and so they're going to have like a slightly rosier view probably of their own athletes, just like a parent would of their own son or even in an individual would be of their own skill.
Right. Right. Absolutely.
So anyway, yeah. So asked you about the actual sending of it. I can't remember what else you said, but you can go on with what your thoughts were there.
I got you. Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, I was just thinking, so that was kind of my luck piece, if you will, in quotes. And then, but I think you made a really good point. I mean, if you can get a coach to do it, that's helpful. And then, you know, the other thing is if you're a guy that's close to getting an offer, well, first of all, to get to that point, probably takes an incredible amount of hard work. So if you're a young kid and you kind of think you're that person, well, you should make sure that you're working as hard as you can. And I think, you know, just from being in now high school football and having been in college football and kind of coming and seeing, you know, in most probably high school programs, there might not be a person that works as hard as most of the Division I kids do. And you have to understand that, you know, if you're talking about a Division I scholarship, you're talking about being in the top 1% of high school football players around the country. You know, so if your team has less than 100 kids on it, then the odds are there's probably not a Division I kid on your team. And, you know, I think like so many of the kids today are into like, I don't even know what they're into, like watching videos of kids like working out as opposed to like just getting out there and like working their tails off, like in the weight room, on the field when you can do it. And certainly there's different places in the country where I think the culture lends itself to that. And I think of like, you know, I think of, you know, places that I've been recruiting would be like, you know, the Southern California where, you know, they have football class and the kids are kind of doing it. So, you know, the young kids are able to see the older kids and, you know, it just builds on itself and they kind of roll through it. And I'm sure Texas is the same way. But, you know, if you're in a place where, you know, football is important, but it's not like a way of life, you might not be able to see exactly what that looks like. But I think it's important just to keep in your mind, like, there's a lot of people that want these scholarships. They're really hard to get. And if I want to get one, I have to work my tail off, you know? So, you know, I would never lose sight of that. Like, being bigger, faster, and stronger, that will help you because that will make your tape better. And ultimately, at the end of the day, that's what's going to get you an offer for the most part is your highlight tape. So that's kind of like another piece to it, which is maybe the most important piece and I think often overlooked.
Well, at the end of the day, those are the elements that you can control. You know, like right. like luck is luck, right? Luck finds you or it doesn't, but right. what are you going to do? Like focus on the things that you can control, and that means working hard, and that means, you know, getting your high school coach to get your information out there to coaches. And I would think like if you're an athlete, if your high school coach is hesitant or reluctant to send your film to a coach, ask him why, right?
No
and,
doubt.
And, yeah. and you're going to get an answer that might be hard to swallow or difficult to take, but it's what you need to hear most likely. And right. it could be that it's because you don't work hard, or it could be because the coach doesn't think you're talented enough for that level, or and he doesn't want to, you know, send a college coach someone that he doesn't really believe that they should consider. And that's a difficult place for a high school coach to be in, but, mm-hmm. but like have that conversation. And like, if it is the latter, if it's like, if you think you're a Division I talent, right. But your high school coach doesn't think that, but he's like willing to send your tape to Division II schools or something like that, then tell him, send my tape to Division II schools. And if a lot of them are interested, then help me. Then let's talk about sending them to Division I schools. Right. And so like, just get them going.
Right. Right. Absolutely. I think that's a good thing. And I think, you know, I just think of it, it's just like anything else. It's just like a student, you know, who's in high school, who's applying to colleges, who maybe doesn't play athletics. Right. And you always hear these terms. So I think, you know, people will know them, but you know, you have your reach schools and you have your safety schools and, you know, and I think having kind of that mentality for most high school football players is a good idea. You know, I think it's a good idea to have to kind of, you know, throw a lot of stuff out there and have a broad range of schools that you're looking at. And some of those can be Division I, and some of those might be Division III. And then as you start to get the feedback, I think that will help you kind of narrow, you know, where you should spend more of your time. And like you said, maybe that happens beforehand because you talk to your high school coach and he kind of directs you and that's certainly valuable. But let's just say your high school coach is like a lot of them and he's just a good guy and he wants you and you say you can play at Division I and you're one of the best players he's ever had and he says let's do it. And you know, you're not hearing back, and then all of a sudden you're hearing back from a bunch of Division III schools. Well, then maybe that's where you're probably going to be a better fit. So, you know, I think that point that you bring up just about, you know, the college coaches are telling you something, either by their silence, right, or by their response. And that's, you know, I think you have to, you can utilize that to help have a more successful recruiting process.
And what would you say to an athlete if he says, all right, I reached out to the Division I school and the coach there said that I should come to the camp? What would you tell an athlete that heard that?
Oh, man. It just depends. I mean, I think, you know, but if we're just having an honest conversation, like, I mean, I've told kids that I've coached in high school, don't go to camp. Not because I don't think they're good enough to play there, but because at a camp, you need to be good at doing things that coaches are going to see at that camp. And, you know, I think the most important thing for a skill kid is to be very fast. And, you know, college coaches really want to get you there because one of the very few ways that they have to verify how fast you are is by getting you to their camp so that they can time you and they can feel comfortable that they have legitimate times on you in a 40-yard dash and, you know, some other explosive tests and go from there. Because when you're a college coach, as you know, and you don't have that information, you're approximating how fast somebody is based on all these different factors. And it's not as clean cut as a 40-yard dash time. So I think, you know, some kids are better football players and, you know, may have an opportunity to get to school X, Y, or Z, may have a better opportunity to get to school X, Y, or Z if they don't go to the camp. And I don't know, what do you agree with that? I mean, I just think like some kids, it's like, you look like pretty good on tape. You look fast enough. They might be curious, but I think at the end of the day, like you're a kid that could fit there. But I'm worried if you go there, you're going to run this time. And then they're going to go end up taking some other kid who didn't come to their camp, who's just like you, but they don't know exactly how fast he is. And they're going to kind of just say like, well, this kid's too slow because we know that his time is, you know, 4 point whatever. And this other kid must be faster.
Right. Yeah, actually, that wasn't the exact point I was thinking about, but I will give my thoughts on that. Well, just last week we had Issa on the podcast, who went to Fordham and then played in the NFL for 6 years. And he said that his recruiting was going great until camp season. And then they found out they were looking at a middle linebacker that weighed 180 pounds, right?
Right.
And he could have not gone to camps. And every time a college coach came in to see him, could have been wearing his big hoodie and probably could have gotten more offers, right? He ended up really not with any real scholarship offers. He got, you know, like a financial aid level offer from Fordham. But like it was being a middle linebacker weighing 180 pounds. That was it. That Big Ten, they were all done. And every one of those teams obviously would have been happy to have him. You know, someone with a long career in the NFL, like, obviously they would have been happy to have him, but they all passed on him for that reason, which I think is what you're getting to. And I would just say, like, if you're an athlete and you're not fast, I wouldn't say, like, that shouldn't be a reason not to go to the camp, because you can go to a camp and not run.
Right.
But just think about it that when you go to a camp, you have an opportunity for your stock to go up or your stock to go down. It's not like, oh, it only can go up at a camp. It's not how it works.
Exactly.
And so you have to think, like, what is going to happen at that camp, and take a real good look at what your strengths and weaknesses are and make sure that you set yourself up. So if you decide to go to the camp, that you participate in the things that are going to make your stock go up, and try to find ways to not showcase your abilities that are going to make your stock go down. You know, it's no different than a guy that's scheduled to be top five in the NFL draft sitting out, you know, the 40-yard dash at a scouting combine in the pro day because it can only hurt him, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And so, like, I would say, like, have that idea. And then also know, you know, depending on where you are on the radar, like, your stock staying flat where it's at might not do, like, might be as good as it going down for you anyway, because you might be far enough away where, like you, all you can do is hope that it goes up and do well. And like, in that case, like, it can only help you if like where you're at is not going to be good enough.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. You know, I guess the one thing that I would add to maybe put a positive spin on this is, if you are going to go to the camp, then, and I tell this to kids all the time when I was a college coach and now, prepare for the things that they're going to do at the camp, which is going to be a 40-yard dash, a broad jump or a vertical, you know, pro agility, you know, like literally just like you, you know, like you wouldn't come into a test, you know, and not study, right? Like that is like studying for a test. Like you're going to go out there and practice your starts and practice 40s. You're going to go out there and practice the broad jump. And that stuff makes a difference. And it's really, at the end of the day, what matters when you're at that camp.
Yeah. I mean, I would contend that without getting any faster, just by having good technique and knowing how to run a 40-yard dash, you could probably take 0.2 seconds off your time. And 0.2 yeah. of a second is enough to go from too slow to better than I thought, you know? And
yeah.
And that could totally be the difference between an offer or no offer.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So, yeah, I think, do you think that all college coaches are as like hung up on the like 40 times as like we sound like we are?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I don't know. I think so. I just think like, I don't know. I mean, the thing is it is important. I mean, I've seen plenty of players without those things do well. But even saying that, I've seen more of those kids without those things not be able to, you know, play to the level of that you're expecting. I don't know if that makes sense.
Do you think that we're biased because the position that it probably matters the most for is defensive back, and we're both defensive back guys?
I don't know, because, I mean, if you talk to guys that are coaching linebackers or D linemen, I mean, how many tackles did you just miss because you're not quite fast enough? You know, or if you're talking about a running back, like, you know, how many times did you just not quite make it there before the linebacker got over the top because you just weren't fast enough?
Yeah.
I do think maybe that there is a little bit, but at the end of the day, gosh, I think about these linebacker coaches. I never heard him say, like, you know, oh, you know, that's all right if he's not that fast. You know, I don't know, but you are right to a certain extent, where the positions that we worked with primarily, it was so critical.
Yeah, I mean, I always thought as like a DB coach, when the athlete is afraid that the wide receiver is faster than him, they can't play. Because they can't cover him. Because now they have to be so far off because they're so afraid of giving up, you know, 70 yards and a touchdown that they can't play.
Yeah. No, so, like, absolutely.
So I always thought that was a factor. Although, like, I don't know how some of them make it work. I guess it just depends on the scheme. Sometimes you can find the right scheme for the right player where you can get away with having some other skills and the speed can be a little diminished in importance.
Yeah. I mean, but, you know, like, you know, John, Hooley, and I always kind of talk about this, and we just, you know, talk about, it's at the end of the day, it's an odds thing, right? Like I said, there are kids that do it, you know, that aren't quite fast enough or what you think you'd have to be. And they end up being great players. There's always those kids, but the odds are against those kids. And so when you're in, you know, when you're recruiting, which is basically projecting, you know, your best bet is to shy away from them because the odds are against them. So if you look at, you know, offering scholarships as kind of, you know, playing the odds, right, you want to go with the guys that have a better chance to make it happen. And I don't know if that makes sense, but certainly you can make it. Like, and there's been plenty of kids. There's even been kids that, gosh, sometimes I thought, like, oh, that guy's not fast enough. It's like, boom, all right, he's a career NFL guy. you know, and you're just like, all right, you know, that can happen.
Yeah, I think it, I always think of there's two factors too that play into it and why college coaches are so into the speed and some of like the numbers that come out is, the first one is, I think college coaches are cocky, right? They think, they look at a guy, if this guy's fast but can't get off of blocks, and another guy can get off of blocks and make tackles, and but is slow, then the college coach thinks to himself, I know I can teach the first guy to get off of blocks and make tackles. I that's my profession. I can do that. I can't teach that second guy to be faster. And so I'm going to take the guy that has the thing I can't teach and doesn't have the thing I can teach. Right? Do you think that's part of it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a huge part of it. I think you always thought that. People always thought that. People always said that. You know, whatever the scenario was, you know, it was always, you teach.
Yeah. Definitely. There's a reason why people are willing to take a 6'6", 220-pound offensive lineman more than they're willing to take a 5'11", 300-pound offensive lineman. Because it's easy to teach the weight. You know what I mean? You could get someone, you know, assuming that they're the right size to put, but people could put weight on. Very difficult to put inches on.
Yes. Very, very difficult.
But and then I was gonna say, I think the other factor is because it's so measurable, right? Like I can say that someone is a 4.45 in the 40-yard dash, and this person's a 4.65 in the 40-yard dash, and I have like a Rolodex of players in my mind of that were 4.45 and ones that were 4.65 and ones that were 4.85, and like I have experience, like, and I can map them against them so easily, and then for like a skill like making a tackle, like seeing someone that's like just good at tackling on tape versus someone that's not, it's just like, it's not as crystal clear. It's harder to make that comparison. And then like, it's like an availability heuristic. So it's like, it's just harder to connect that skill difference to like a tangible difference when you're watching the tape, in the way that it's easier to do with a 40-yard dash time or a height or a weight.
Absolutely. I mean, that's like, you just hit it on the head there. It's just like, you have so few of those things, and really football recruiting is one of the most unique out of all the sports, because it's so regional. Whereas if you look at these other sports, if you look at, you know, basketball or hockey or baseball, the way that they structure the recruiting in those is they get all of the best players, and then those players like travel around and play against each other and go to like all these combines with each other. So they really, really do know. And like, if you ever look at basketball, I always think it's insane, like how little they miss on, like, you know, lottery picks or like the Division I guys, you know, like you don't have the, you know, Walter Paytons and Jerry Rices coming out of the FCS. Like you just don't have that, because all the best kids play against the best kids, and they weed each other out, and then they go and just watch those guys. And so they're able to kind of get that barometer that you can't get in football. And then, but how do you get it if you're a football coach? You measure how tall they are. You time them in a 40-yard dash, you get a broad jump, you get a vert, right? And now like you said, now I know what a 4.4, I know what a 4.44 can do. I know what a 4.65 can do and what their limits. So that's kind of how you, as a college coach, create that.
Yeah, it's like trying to think of an analogy. It's like you only have the regular season. You only have like where everyone plays everyone. And in basketball and these other sports, you have like that postseason where you then like take the best from here and the best from here, and you play them against each other. And then you find like who the new bests are, and you play them against each other until you kind of like let them play it out. Where in football, it's just, there's no way. It doesn't, and nothing close to that happens.
Right.
So
exactly.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a factor. Like, you just look at it, though, the recruiting thing is such a crapshoot, because I always try to compare it to, like, Tom Brady, arguably the best player that ever played in the NFL, drafted in the 6th round, right? So that means that there's, like, teams and teams of professionals. Like, so you're talking, like, let's say every team has 20 people in their front office times 30 teams. You have 600 people that are spending their full time trying to project who's going to be good and who's not going to be good. You're looking at film that is like pretty close, like for like. You're getting multiple in-person visits with each and every one of these athletes. And then they're like ranking them as to who's going to be good and who's not going to be good. And Tom Brady ends up being, you know, 180th out of his like group of, you know, that came out in the same year as he did. And then you're asking college football coaches to look at, you know, high school film, which is like every kid that they're looking at is by far the best player on the tape, you know, at all times. And so like, they're not playing against each other. And then at the same time, you're also spending way less time because you have the people that are doing the evaluating are the same people that are coaching, you know, the games on Saturdays. So they're spending way less time on it and they're just taking shots, you know, and they miss a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, some of them, you know, some coaches, and I always talk about this with other coaches, I don't know if you and I have ever had this discussion, but you almost feel like, you know, if you're at an FBS school, you have 85 scholarships, like you can take a few more shots and miss. You know, if you're at a FCS school and you have 60 or 63 scholarships, like that one miss hurts you so much more. You know, even Alabama, like even Alabama can miss on a kid and not be hurt as bad as if the University of Maine misses on a kid on a full scholarship. That just percentage wise of like what you're talking about, the makeup of your team, like that just hurts you more. So I think that people kind of understand that. And you see that at that level, not at Alabama because they don't have to miss, but, you know, but maybe it's like a MAC school or something where like they're going to take some shots and try to get, you know, they're going to try to get the JJ Watt or the whoever else, you know, the what's the pass rusher there for the Dolphins, Jason Taylor's, you know, they're going to take some shots to try to get those kids because they have 85 scholarships. So why not?
What do you think, like in your time, what do you think that the guys that are quote unquote under recruited have in common? Meaning like the guys that probably could, you know, after seeing them through a 4-year college career, you say like they could have played at a higher level, but weren't recruited. What do you think like they all share in common? What's like the common thread there?
I think the most common thing is like lacking a measurable. So either they might be a little bit short, they might be a little bit slow, they might be, you know, a little bit undersized in terms of weight. But I would say I think the common thread is, right, some measurable thing that this person doesn't have. And, you know, like, you know, when you're recruiting, you know, and you go out to see a kid and you look at a kid and you think about the position he's going to play in college, you expect that kid to look a certain way. And when they don't look that way, I think then that's the kid that's going to become under-recruited. Or, you know, the speed thing factors in too, but I think probably now that I'm saying this, that it's probably height, weight, probably like how they look more often than not. I don't know. Do you think that's...
Yeah, I don't know. I probably would have said something different, but in response to what you were saying, do you think that that means that if college coaches just dial down their sensitivity to that height, weight, or like the look of the athlete just a little bit, they would do better? Or do you think that like they might get one more of like the under recruited guy, but they'd also let in like a flood of guys that were never going to make it?
Yeah, I think it's probably more the latter, because I'd say at the end of the day, you know, like you said, it's a crapshoot. So again, if it's a crapshoot, well, what are you going to bet on? What's got the best odds? Well, if I'm looking at an offensive tackle and one of them 6'3" and one of them 6'5", the 6'5" kid has better odds of making it in college because he's got longer arms, et cetera, and everything, you know, that goes with it. You know, if I'm looking at a linebacker, one of them's 5'11" and the other one's 6'1.5", this kid that's 6'1.5" is probably going to be able to take on a guard easier. He's probably going to be able to see over the line better and find the ball, et cetera, et cetera. So I think, you know, it's hard for a college coach to dial it down, because I think that you would probably just end up letting in guys that don't necessarily make it.
Yeah, I wonder, like, it'd probably be worth trying to figure out, like, what coaches, what staffs are over, you know, like, more Looking at like who is like the biggest, fastest, strongest type guys, and who is like dialing that down and thinking of that as being less important, and then thus picking up like the guys that are like the, I don't know, the people missing those things but have everything else that are getting, you know, shopped over.
Yeah. I'll tell you, that would be interesting
to see like who then, like, you know, there's probably a lot of other variables that would be like who wins and loses, but then like maybe just who produces more NFL players, you know?
Right.
Anyway, it'd be worth thinking about and like looking into it. If I have a chance one day.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. It makes me think about, these two guys that I worked with at UConn. So one of them was a defensive coordinator, and he played in high school. And one of the other coaches, who was a tight ends coach, he was recruiting, and he recruited this kid. And the coach was at West Virginia at the time, and he was recruiting the kid. And I remember them having like some conversation one time, and you know, the older coach that was at West Virginia said to him, you know, you were too small, too slow back then, and you still are. but that high school football player, he went to Wisconsin, you know, like he played at Wisconsin. But at West Virginia, this guy was like, you're too small and too slow. You know, and this guy was from Pittsburgh. So it's like, you know, that's down the road.
Right.
But he wasn't too small and too slow for Wisconsin, right? So it's just, I always think it's, and he like, you know, played in a Rose Bowl and stuff. You know, it wasn't like they, you know, they were good. Like, so it's just, I think that is an interesting point that you bring up. And I think it's good, like, especially when we're doing this, I think for kids a lot, right? And
yeah.
You don't want to be discouraged. I think a lot of the stuff that we say can be discouraging, but you don't say it to be discouraging. I think we just want to be honest about kind of what the landscape looks like, you know, behind those closed doors. You don't know about.
On that note, like, what do you tell the athlete? I mean, you're a high school coach now. What do you tell the athlete that is too short, too little, too slow, but is a hell of a player? And like, what do you tell them? I mean, you probably have those guys.
Yeah. I mean, I think so, you know, maybe I'm more fortunate than a lot of high school coaches because I have, you know, a lot of experience on the other side. And I think, I've had this conversation with family, friends and stuff. And I think I just try to be really honest about the scenarios. So I think, you know, depends on the kid, depends on the situation. But I think a really common conversation to happen is, you know, listen, for whatever reason, you know, these schools aren't interested in you for a scholarship. They may be interested in you to come and walk on there, and you can do that. And then I'd probably talk to them about the process of walking on a Division I school, which, you know, can be a really, really difficult thing to do. But also on the back end, it can be really rewarding, whether you play a lot or not. I mean, I think, you know, in the reason that I talked to them about that is because you want to have an idea of what that looks like, you know? So if you're a kid who says, well, I want to play Division I football, I don't care, well, then you're a good candidate to walk on. If you're a kid that says, I want to play, you might not be as good of a candidate to walk on, you know? And then, so whatever, sorry to kind of shift gears, but, you know, and then I'd go to the kid and maybe talk about some of the other schools that might be a better fit and talk about, you know, how their skill sets might translate there and what, you know, what that might mean for the odds of their career there, you know, versus Division I. And then, you know, you just want to give them information, you know, about what it might look like if they enter that world. And then hopefully they can make some decision, you know, with hopefully some added information. I don't know if that makes sense. So I say, hey, this can be really hard, but I think you'd have a shot to maybe do this or that. Maybe you have a shot to be on special teams. Hey, maybe if you're able to put on this much weight, you can play, or, you know, hey, maybe you'd be able to catch the coach's eyes. But if that doesn't work out, you're going to be on scout team. And this is kind of what being on scout team looks like. And then versus, hey, you go to, you know, Trinity College or Williams or, you know, whatever it might be. And those are great schools. And, you know, the odds are you're going to play sooner. So I think it's kind of that, you know, little fish, big pond, big fish, small pond kind of scenario that you want the kid to at least be able to consider when making that decision.
Yeah. So I guess like on the practical side of like how to get past those things and still get the scholarship offer, it might be the things that we talked about before, right, where you just, where you got to like hide the thing that's going to bring your stock down, you know, as best you can, you know, and it's hard to do that because coaches want to know that piece of it, right?
Yeah, it's hard, but like, hey, we have like linemen. I tell these guys, I'm like, once the fall starts, you wear Timberlands to school every single day.
Yeah, you don't.
Okay, like, and sometimes like the kids will like look at me, and I'll just be like, I'm not kidding. Like, don't ever wear shoes. Don't ever wear shoes.
You don't want the 6'1", you know, wide receivers coach coming in and looking down at your O-lineman.
Exactly. I mean, that's just like that's a real thing. Like that is just good advice for a high school kid.
Yeah. And then I think like where you went with the question is totally like a good place to go, which is to say that one way or another, if they're not recruiting you to put you on scholarship at a Division I school, if you go there, then the coaches there think that everyone else that they're bringing in your recruiting class are better than you. That's what they think. Yes. And they might be right and they might be wrong. They're more often right than wrong, but they are wrong a lot. And if you are, I always say like, there are some subset of walk-ons that become scholarship players, become starters. I mean, you and I have seen plenty of guys do that. Some of the best players that we've ever coached were walk-ons when they started. Yeah. And so like that is a thing that happens, and it happens all the time. But it happens one for about every 10 times the other thing happens, which is that they walk on, they play on the scout team, and by the time they're a senior or junior, they get onto some special teams and maybe become a backup at the position that they play and never earn a scholarship. That is like the normal thing.
Right, right. And so, you know, like when we were at Fordham, it was because of the way, if you remember, like the walk-ons, they couldn't receive any financial aid. So like I would always be really cut and dry with the people. And I think I now carry that with me there. I started just because of the nature of the rules. But if you are counting on earning a scholarship to financially afford the school you're going to, you shouldn't do that. Like you should not come in as a walk-on counting on earning a scholarship and making that part of how you're making that financial decision, like because of what you just said, because most of the time that's not going to happen.
Yeah. That would be like going to Vegas and putting $10,000 on black, like a few times in a row. That's your plan to pay for college.
No question. Less fun though. Vegas would be more fun than being on the scout team.
Being a scout team guy for 3 years. That's less fun. Yeah. That's probably true.
I think so.
I mean, you know, the thing is always like that is a lifestyle that does work for some athletes. I mean, you and I have seen that too, where like that is like what they want, and that is more fun for them. That's what they want rather than playing at a Division III school. And that's totally fine too.
Right. And you know what, now that you kind of say that and I think about it, most of those kids, I shouldn't say most, but a lot of those kids come from good high school programs.
Like those kids being who?
Those kids that can walk on and be more satisfied with a smaller role, but can be in a bigger program. You know, I think a lot of those kids are able to do that when they come from a high school program that's maybe a little bit more intense, because they have a better idea of what they're stepping into. They've been, you know, weightlifting year round and practicing all the time and doing, you know, like they are in some ways more trained for that difference. Whereas you're a kid that's coming from some program where you were the best. Now you're stepping into something where now you're into the bottom 10% of the team. And also you have all this, it's this much harder than it was there. You're not having success, you know? So I think that, not to say that the other kids can't, but when you said that, I just started thinking about some of those guys, and like, God, a lot of those kids came from, you know, what I would consider to be pretty good high school programs that were more satisfied with that smaller role.
Yeah. And this is getting back to what I was going to ask, or at least say before, which was when I asked you what you thought like the common thread between people that got under recruited were, I actually would have thought of something else, which also relates to the walk-ons that became successful players, which is there's like a mentality component that I think there's like part of it is like the indignation of like being passed over and like that motivating and pushing people, but it doesn't always have to be that. I think it's sometimes it manifests itself as like, if the reason you were successful in high school was not because of height or speed or weight or athletic ability, but because like you just refuse to let someone else beat you, that's like your thing, and you can maintain that, then you will find like those types of guys, I think, find a way to be good wherever they are at whatever they do.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like, if I have to be in the gym, you know, 24/7 to get it done, if I have to watch the extra film, if I have to like stay out after practice and catch balls for an hour, like if I just have to like go as 100% from whistle to whistle every single time, whereas like some people do that some of the times and then 90% and then they kind of finish place sloppily sometimes, and I'm just going to be that person that's 100% all the time. And because they know that's what it takes to win, and they have that mentality that says that I'll figure out what it takes to win and I'm going to do that thing. Those are the guys that get under recruited because they don't have the measurables and then end up being great for the level they play at. And then I think there's also the trait of a lot of the walk-ons that have been successful.
Yeah, I would agree. You're definitely right.
So I don't know if that's something that an athlete can, in some ways that is like, I think as an innate of an ability as height or weight or, you know, some of these other things that are speed. It's like some people kind of have that gear and some people don't, but I imagine it's something that if focused on can be at least improved in people.
Yeah, I would think so.
So to the extent that that's practical advice for someone, you know, I hope someone can transact on it.
Yeah, it's not, you know, it's all this stuff is hard. You know, you're talking about, you know, getting a scholarship. And again, I go back, you know, you're talking about a small percentage of kids. So, I mean, I think all these things are good and you have to, you know, put them together and try to give yourself the best opportunity. And maybe it's a little improvement with mentality. Maybe it's a little improvement with speed. Maybe it's a little, you know, maybe and maybe those little things add up.
Yeah. And I guess I want to definitely pick your brain on some other things. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about prep schools.
Okay.
Because that's where you're at now. You spent the last 3 or 4 years now, I feel like, coaching at a prep school. And that's a different world. I know very little about it, but it is a path for some athletes. And I don't know, to the extent that you feel like you can also touch on junior colleges, if you think that you have a decent perspective on that, because I think they're tied together in some ways. And you could just jump on it from there and tell me what you think.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, so, you know, the prep schools can be a good path. I mean, and there's a couple of different kind of routes of entry. So one would be, obviously, we have the majority of our team is made up of kids that are, you know, freshmen, sophomores, juniors, and seniors. And a lot of kids nowadays, what's really popular, and this is certainly not unique to football, and now that I'm doing this, I actually think that it's been going on for a long, long time in other sports, is for kids to repeat a year of school. And, you know, that allows for you know, academic development, social development, and, you know, along the lines of what we're talking about, physical and athletic development, because you're in high school for 5 years. So, I go back and think about, okay, how different was I my freshman year of college than my senior year of high school? And, you know, for a lot of kids and a lot of people that can go back and think about that, there's probably a big difference. And some of, you know, what the prep school does is give kids potentially an opportunity to, you know, maybe take advantage of an extra year of development. And then the other way that you can come in is as a post-grad, which essentially you're doing the same thing, but you're just coming in at a later date, which is really what I think, even before I got into this world, that's kind of what I knew of the prep school, was like, you know, hey, here's the kind of kid that's a little bit under recruited, or he got hurt during the senior year, or, you know, his grades are good, but they could be a little bit better. And now here's this opportunity for an extra year of school, you know, physical development, athletic development, skill development on the field, and, you know, maturing. So, you know, these schools kind of give that opportunity to kids. And, you know, I think that that can be a really valuable thing for a, you know, 17, 18 year old kid. And I think, you know, the thing, and you may have an idea about this, or maybe you don't, but, you know, a lot of kids are actually at different ages when they graduate high school. And so if you're a kid that's going to be 17, you know, in your senior year of high school, there's other kids that might be 18 and, you know, probably not many, but a few that might be 19. Like, if you're on that lower end of the spectrum, like, this might be a huge break for you, because, you know, physically, if you're a male, that's just, you're still developing, and to have that extra year to help you showcase yourself might go a long way to go from under recruited to, you know, now getting whatever opportunities you think. So, you know, that's a little bit about kind of the positives of the prep school. And the thing about how this works is for the postgraduate. So that's a kid that completes 4 years of high school. He plays, you know, football or whatever sport it is, but we're talking football, I guess. Nothing seems to work in his recruiting process. He's looking for something. He finds a prep school, he goes there. That's great. And that definitely happens. But like the school, most schools are kind of limited in terms of how many of those postgrads they can take. So the school that I work at, we can take 4 of those. And then, you know, there's some schools that we play that can take 8. And then there's some schools like Bridgeton and Milford, which are pretty much entirely made up of kids like that. But they're few and far between. So that's a great option. It's just those spots, I guess, are more highly coveted and harder to come by. But yeah, I'll tell you, doing that can make a big difference. And, you know, we have a couple kids at our school right now. We have 4 postgrads, and all of them are getting, you know, Division I from FCS to small FBS interest. And they didn't have that before, but they're physically more developed. You know, they're in a different, you know, some of them came from good programs. Some of them came from smaller programs where they probably didn't have the exposure and all those things. But I think certainly they're getting a different level of recruitment than they had prior to coming to Taft.
So to take just a step back, what is a prep school? You know, I think like for some people that is like the first question.
That's a good question. Well, I guess now that I say that, I mean, both the schools that I've worked at, Trinity Pauling and Taft, are what are considered, I guess, independent boarding schools. So they are schools where, you know, some percentage of the population at the 2 schools I worked at, you know, I don't know, it's probably in the 60 to 75% of the school's population. They actually live at the school. They go to school there. They play sports. They go back to their dorm room like you would in college, kind of. And they do homework, they get up and they do it all again. So they actually live at the school, which is like, you know, not common for most high school age kids. So that would be, I guess when I'm saying a prep school, that's probably kind of really what I'm talking about. And then there's other schools that are, you know, day schools that are, you know, private schools that are day schools that would, you know, allow you to repeat. And so maybe if you had a school that was near you, like Brunswick School is a school, for example, that we play in some sports. And that's a day school in Greenwich, Connecticut. And, you know, they'll have kids come in there and maybe the kid would repeat his sophomore year or his junior year, but they don't have postgraduates. And I don't know if there's any day schools that do have postgraduates. I'm sure there are. I just don't know of them. But that's what a prep school is. And they're, you know, they're not a public school. They're funded by tuition and, you know, donations and things like that. And a lot of them are what they call independent. So they kind of do their own thing. It's a little different than like, you know, a Catholic school where it's kind of run by the church. So I guess maybe I'm not the best person to ask about that since I don't seem to know that much, but I don't know if that kind of gives you an idea.
Yeah. Let me tell you like what I would, how I would describe it, and then tell me where I'm missing the boat.
Good. Yeah.
So I would describe it as maybe entirely, but at least mostly, there's schools in the Northeast. Is that right?
Definitely mostly, yeah.
Okay. And what are there other parts of the country that have like a big number of them too? Or is it really Northeast and then there's sprinklings elsewhere?
Northeast and then there's sprinklings. Like I think there's some pretty significant ones in Michigan or one or two, you know, one or two. And then there's a few in California, Colorado, maybe one or two, and something in Texas maybe. But yeah, definitely mostly the Northeast, most of the Northeast. That's definitely accurate.
Right. And then I would also say that at least from a football perspective, if I'm going to call something a prep school, that means that they offer PGs. Like they have athletes that have not gone to school there that then go there specifically, you know, not entirely for football, but for a major reason of it being to play football.
Definitely.
And so like there are high schools that might have the word prep in their name, but they're not prep schools in the sense that you and I are referring to.
Right, right.
And then,
yeah, absolutely.
And then I would say like an additional component to it is not 100%, but mostly they board some percentage of their students. So that means like they have students that live there on campus in dorms, just like they would in college.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So I think that for most cases, like athletes would go there, in a sense for football. And I'd say like additionally, in most cases, like a lot of these schools are like some of like the finest like educational institutions for high school age kids in the country, right? If you're a millionaire and a billionaire, like a lot of them are sending their kids to these types of schools. Would you say that that's true? And I'm sure like some of them more than others, but that is like a vibe that I think comes through.
Yeah, definitely. That, you know, a lot of these schools are really, you know, are expensive. And so certainly the population is that has, you know, their parents have quite a bit of money.
Okay. And then if you're recruited to go to one of these schools to play football, whether it's as a repeat sophomore, junior, whatever, or a post-grad, what does like that look like? What is a scholar? Do they offer scholarships? Like, are you paying $50,000 a year? Like, what is going on?
Well, most of the schools, at least the ones that I've been at, and from what I understand, everyone's really supposed to operate this way. They offer need-based financial aid. So it's really comparable to, you know, the college like FAFSA and how that would generate, you know, financial need. So you have kids that are here that get no financial aid, that have to pay the full amount of tuition. And then you have kids that probably pay literally nothing to come to these schools. So that is at least supposed to be determined strictly by financial need.
Okay. And so there's no athletic scholarships, even for like post-grads.
There's no athletic scholarships to my knowledge. I'm sure some schools are different. And from what I've seen, you know, people are willing to maybe work with a student athlete that maybe can bring something to the school that, you know, the school wouldn't otherwise have, or just the school needs. So, you know, for example, like, you know, a kid that's a three sport varsity athlete is pretty desirable at these schools because athletics are a pretty decent size of the, or a piece of the culture, because there's no PE programs, right? So every kid plays sports. That's the PE program. So they have a lot of sports teams, and just like everything that they do, they want to succeed in everything that they do. So if you have a kid that, you know, plays football, plays basketball, plays lacrosse or baseball, whatever it might be, like that's a kid that's helping the school on those fronts. And also, I was just going to say, like, also, if you have a kid that's really super smart and good at a sport, right, and maybe has a lot of Ivy League interest, like there's like another thing, right, that you can sell to the school, like, right, to get somebody that's going to go to, you know, Harvard, Yale or Princeton.
Could you get an academic scholarship for these types of schools from like your high school grades?
As far as I know, you can't get that either.
Okay. So it's all financial aid. And then
it's, yeah.
it sounded to me like it kind of works like it does at Division III schools, where it's technically by rule, there should be no difference between an athlete and a non-athlete in the financial aid package they get if like all else was equal, right?
Right.
But that probably in reality, it plays out differently.
I think depending on the school, it may. But I would certainly say that some non-athletes that are, like you asked about the academic scholarship, I think some of those kids can kind of get the same, I don't know what the word is. They could receive kind of the same type of backing that maybe an athlete would receive in terms of finances that maybe went a little above and beyond what they qualified for. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So like both things are valued, you know, like the academic piece is probably just as valued as the athletic.
And the athletic piece, can that be your ticket in? Whereas like otherwise you might get denied entry, you would get accepted entry because of athletic skill and ability?
Well, I think so. I mean, I think every kid's got to meet kind of some baseline. Like you think about like Fordham, kind of our admissions. So like every kid has to meet that baseline. But certainly, you know, now you have somebody that's advocating you through admissions, then yeah, that's probably going to be your ticket in. You know, you gotta meet some baseline level, right? And then if you get to that, and now, right, like now you're bringing this athletic skill with you that kind of puts you, maybe separates you from the other people that are getting to that level.
Because otherwise, like, if your parents don't make any money, why not just go to one of these schools? Because they're going to let you go for free. You know, you have to get in too, right? And so the football piece might be the piece that gets you in. Okay.
Definitely.
That makes a ton of sense. And I think you touched on this before, but what is like the characteristic of someone where prep school is the right choice for them? And what is the characteristic of someone that prep school is not the right choice for them?
So, I guess, are you asking like just a kid that's, you know, just looking at it? Or are you asking like farther down, like, are you asking like a post-grad or are you asking like a, like an underclassman? Because I think it could be a little different.
Yeah, well, let's start with the post-grads because that's probably more relevant to the audience that would listen to a recruiting podcast. They're probably seniors and the repeat sophomore year has sailed. So
no question. Well, so for those types of kids, I would say the kid that it's not the right choice for is the kid that has some type of scholarship offer to some place that is, you know, putting him and his family in a good financial situation. Like maybe you have a Division II school and, you know, and they're covering 80% of the bill. Like to me, it's a tough pill to swallow as a prep school coach to come in and say like, yeah, but come on, take a shot here. Maybe we can get you 100%. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Cause I mean, I had a kid at Trinity Pauling 2 years ago and he came under a different circumstance, but in our very first scrimmage in warmups, he broke his hand and he was a post grad. Now everything ended up working out and he went to a great place, but like, you know, that can happen. So I think if you have a good setup, you have a school that you're happy with and you have a good, you know, good package that makes sense for your family, like it's not worth to me the risk. The kid that it makes sense for is the kid that was hurt his senior year of high school. Maybe he was hurt, you know, leading into his senior year, so he didn't have a lot of tape, et cetera, et cetera. Maybe you grew a bunch and you're still kind of growing into your body, or maybe you're just under-recruited, but you're a really good player and this will give you a chance, you know, especially like you're a kid from some different part of the country and this gives you a chance to get exposed to a bunch of different college coaches. You know, maybe you're the kid that just needs to clean up your grades just a little bit and get your SAT score up. So I'd say like those are kind of the kids that fall in the category where now it makes sense for you. So to me, it's like kind of cut and dry. Like you have something, you have a good opportunity, you take that. Like you go, because at the end of the day, that's what you're coming there for, right? Like you're coming there to get, you know, a scholarship offer most likely, or just, you know, different opportunities. So if that opportunity has already presented itself, go and take it.
Yeah, and then go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Right, so that makes sense. And then as far as like PG being like a good chance for someone that needs to get their grades up, from what I understand, there's like a limit to that. It's basically like you have to be pretty close. If you're not close, then you can't make up enough usually in 1 year of a post-grad where like that's not as good of an option as say going to junior college might be for you.
Right, right. So definitely you can't make up a lot. You got to be close. And, you know, maybe it's that, you know, you had one class that you really did poorly in and that class is getting counted for your, you know, qualifications, and you could replace that one class. And maybe you're going to be like, well, I'm going to get an A instead of a whatever, a C, and that makes a big difference. Or maybe you're a kid that has, you know, special accommodations, so you can replace a couple classes instead of one. Or maybe you're a kid that just wants some more time to prepare for the SAT and take that. And that's the one thing that you see that can go up more significantly is the SAT. Than the grades. But you're absolutely right. Like you're gonna have to be close, you know, and a lot of times you're talking about a kid that's, you know, borderline for an Ivy League school. So you're talking about a kid with excellent grades, but he just needs a little bit more to get to that level.
Yeah. And like it also, I think, I imagine if you're the type of athlete that was borderline or just below the border on grades, like even if you did go to a college directly, I bet you'd be like high risk to not make it academically. Whereas right, I bet if you have like that 1 year at like a boarding school where you get like kind of like halfway into the college experience, I think I would think of it as being halfway. Maybe you have a different thought, but you get yourself halfway into that college experience. Now all of a sudden you can get yourself, you know, prepared so that when you finally do go to college, you actually have a much better chance of being successful.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, definitely look at it like it's really like a, especially for the post grads, it's really like a bridge program where you're kind of on your own, but there's a lot more oversight than there is in college. Like people are really checking on you. You have, you know, dorm parents who are coming and checking on you in your free time, and then you have people that are keeping a really, really close eye on your classes, and you know there's expectations to do homework and all those things that I think set you up with the habits that will make you successful in college.
Yeah. And then as far as like recruiting interest going up, I agree with you that if you go to a PG school, you know, you take a PG year, that you are going to get more likely than not, you're going to get more interest than when you had as a senior in high school. I agree with you on that. And the question is like, to what extent, how would you think about that? I always thought that it was like, if you were getting heavily recruited by Division III schools, you know, that like you might get to the spot where you're getting recruited now by Division II schools. And if you were getting heavily recruited by Division II schools, you might get to the spot where you're starting to get some FCS looks and interest. And then, you know, kind of up like that one step. That's how I always thought of it, as being like an average case, but you have probably a lot more use cases than I do.
No, I think that is probably pretty accurate for the average case. You know, barring some, you know, extenuating circumstance, that's probably the average, right? Like, yeah, probably like a step up, you know, I definitely would agree with that.
And do you think that a lot of the parents and athletes that you deal with that are coming in, like maybe they were getting recruited by Division III schools and they wanted to open up more doors and opportunities, are they thinking that they're going like to Alabama once this year is over, or are they more realistic?
Well, at least in my dealings with them, I make sure that they're more realistic than that. And, you know, I think, you know, I haven't really gotten into it at the new school I'm at, but at the last school I was at, you know, we were always really honest with the kids about what this meant and what it didn't mean, you know, and that it's an opportunity, and kind of like the same thing that you said, like, you're not going to go from, you know, going to Western Connecticut State to Alabama unless you grow 6 inches between now and then and this and that, right? So we always had those conversations with people up front to kind of make sure that the expectations were in line with reality. But also, like, we always felt like that the post-grad program was really valuable above and beyond football. Like, we really did feel like it was something that prepared the kids for college and prepared them to be successful, take football out of the equation. So you know, that was always a big part of what we talked about. And I think that that is definitely true for a lot of the kids that we're dealing with, right? Because these are a lot of the kids that, you know, just quite didn't get there. And, you know, for a lot of high school aged males, some of what it takes to get there is just time to mature and time for your brain to develop and mature in the ways, you know, that are going to help you be successful. So, you know, that's that, those are the conversations that, that we would have, you know, kind of leading in. So, so people hopefully are expecting, you know, a reasonable outcome.
And do you think people listen to you, like athletes and their families listen to you more because of your background?
I don't know if they do.
I think they should. I don't know if they, yeah. I don't know if they do either, but.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't, I mean, I think sometimes, I mean, I think it's just like anything in life. I think where if it's something that they want to hear, then they do. If it's something that they don't want to hear, then I don't know if it helps anymore.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm telling what they want to hear, if I'm saying like, yeah, you seem like a Patriot League player, like I think I could see you at a, you know, they're excited. If it's like, yeah, you know, well, you might be more NESCAC. I think they just like, whatever, see you later.
Yeah. That is the issue, is that you want to be helpful. You want to be honest, but it's, sometimes it's hard to get people to listen to the things that they don't want to hear. I think that was well put. As far as you and, you know, transitioning from coaching Division I to coaching at prep school, what's that been like? What's that transition been like for you?
You know, it's been interesting. It's been good overall because I was able to kind of create a different lifestyle for myself and my family. And that was my ultimate goal, was to be able to spend more time with my family. And so that part is super positive. And in terms of the coaching, it's similar, even though it is so different. I mean, you're still dealing with, you know, kids and football. And it's still, at the end of the day, it's the same thing where, you know, even in college, you have, even though everyone there is, you know, the best of the best, so to speak, you know, you still in college had the kids that were the hardest workers on your team, and then a bunch of kids that were kind of in the middle, and then some kids that were on the edges, right? And like the whole thing is you're always trying to get everyone that's, you know, just to kind of move them up a peg, like on in terms of their commitment and all that stuff. And so that still remains. And, you know, I think, you know, that part of it where you're just trying to develop kids and their character and their work ethic is the same, even though it presents itself in a lot different way. Just because in college, it's about winning games and what that means and those types of things. Here, you know, you might never see it on the football field, but maybe a kid just, you know, all of a sudden is doing his homework in whatever class and going and getting extra help. But you are, you know, building those skills that hopefully will help them throughout life. So that part of it I've really enjoyed. And just in terms of football, taking everything else out of it, you know, obviously it's a lot less. Football is a much smaller piece of my job now. I spend more time planning classes and grading papers than I do, you know, breaking down film and recruiting. But I still, you know, we still run the same, you know, scheme, you know, that colleges run and things like that, and just do a little bit less with it. So, you know, if you had 20 calls on your call sheet, now maybe I only have 5.
So first of all, you teach math. So if you're grading papers, you're doing something wrong. But so game day, are you still screaming expletives at the top of your lungs when you give up a touchdown, or are you a little calmer these days?
You know, I took the expletives out of the vocabulary for the game days, but I still will lose my mind from time to time. But I have tempered it down a bit.
Do they at least put you in the booth so you're a little bit removed from the players, like you were when I coached with you?
Well, you see, no, because the hard thing about being in the booth here is like you're literally standing with the parents, so they got me down on the field, so that way I'm not away from the kids, but I am away from the parents, so it's all good. But you know what, I don't know, I always think about this. I just think about like, God, is it okay to like sometimes just yell at a kid because he hasn't done what he's supposed to do? And I think it is okay. Like, I mean, I'm not saying to like demean a kid and to like personally attack him, but like if I told you to come off the edge and contain and keep everything inside and you didn't do it three times in a row, like it might be okay for me then to change my approach with you and yell at you and maybe lose my mind for half a second, and then we can all feel good about it.
Yeah, I definitely wouldn't have ever described you as someone that berates players, no. but you always did have like that losing your, as you described, like losing your mind happened during games, and probably not so much during practice, but during games for sure. And you know me, like that is not me at all.
Yeah, because you're the only person that's always composed. I would say I was mostly composed, but that builds up in a person. You know, other people will just let it out all the time. Yes, you were always composed. You never lost it. But you're the unique one.
Yeah. Well, my question, I guess, is like, is it something that you just feel like you can't control, or is it something that you think that helps, or is it maybe both, or you let one kind of like convince you of the other? I don't know.
Well, you know what? I think for some time, I couldn't control it. Or maybe I thought, I never thought about controlling it. That's better. I never thought about controlling, like just, you know, kind of losing it. But now I have actually given it more thought. And because when you go into like a classroom and you're teaching math, like, because sometimes the kids make me lose my mind in there too. Like, I mean, like how many times can I tell you to show your work and you don't show your work? Like, I want to lose it, but it's just not the appropriate setting. So it has given me an opportunity to kind of reflect on it. And I think to now I use it to, I don't know, you know, I'm still kind of figuring it out, but I guess the way that I justify it in my mind is that I'm trying to change maybe the sense of urgency that this particular player feels about doing this one particular thing. Does that make sense? And I don't know if that's good. I still kind of wrestle with that, but I do actually give it a lot of thought now, and think about, you know, how do they react to that? And, you know, is it effective? I still find it to be pretty effective. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess I never thought of it that way. I always thought of it, and maybe it's just the way I would react to things. Like that would not be the thing that gets me
right
to do it right. I always thought that the players I'm working with desperately want to be good at what they're doing out there. Desperately.
Right.
And so if they're not doing what it takes to be successful, then it's possible that it's like a lack of knowing. It's possible that it's like a lack of concentration. And it's possible that it's a lack of ability, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think what you're saying is that you think that if it's a lack of concentration, that you can heighten that concentration, or as you called it, like sense of urgency, by making a big deal of it. And tell me if you think I summed that up.
Yeah, I think I'm representing you well. Yeah, I'd agree with that.
And so, like, for me, I think that for as many players as there might be that like would get turned, like their mind like turned on to that thing based on that interaction, I think that there's more players that would become distracted by it.
I agree.
I think when most people get yelled at, they have like this gorilla like standing on top of them that is like, I just got yelled at, and not like a laser focus on the thing that I want them to focus on.
Yeah, definitely.
So that's definitely. Like, I always thought, like, whenever a player gets a penalty, like, the next play, they're, like, way less likely to be good than the next play because they're still thinking about the penalty.
Right.
And so, like, if someone got a penalty, sometimes you just take them out of the game because you're afraid that, the lack of concentration is gonna hurt them.
Right.
And so I think of it as, like, yelling at someone could have, like, that same effect. And maybe I'm just soft, but...
No, I agree. And, you know, I should have said this, but, like, the kids that I would... It would be less, you know, it's a much smaller portion of the team that I would yell at. Like, there's some kids where, like you said, like, and maybe I probably don't know all the kids that fall under that category, like what you kind of how you explain how you would react to somebody yelling at you. But there are some kids where I know, like, if you yell at that kid, like, he is done for the day. So, like, those kids I never use that on. And I don't know if this is just like some stupid coach speak, but some other kids, I don't get that feeling. So I kind of use that tactic, and I'm probably not as sensitive to the kids that, you know, feel like it's that gorilla on them as I should be, but I at least try to pick out kids that are like, that won't work for them, you know, as I kind of get to know the team and the kids. So I did warn them when we came to the first game, like, because I hadn't really yelled at them during practice. I did warn them, like, sometimes during the game I lose my mind, but it will be all right. Like, I still love you guys. Like, it's not personal. Yeah. So I did warn them.
I always remembered Coach Moorhead would never yell at me or really anyone except for during the game. He would yell at anything. Any little thing would cause like a complete explosion. And yeah, I always wonder because it comes across to me as someone that is out of control. That, like, this is not a tactic that they're employing. This is I cannot control my emotions, and so here it comes.
Well, I think, yeah, a lot of times I think that is what it is. Probably the vast, vast majority of times that is what it is.
Yeah.
So, but you know what? It's a lot less now because it's just, if we don't win a game, they still need me to teach that pre-calc class. So
yeah, I was going to ask
you, like, get rid of me.
Do you, it might be hard to, like, really reflect on this, but do you feel like it matters less to you whether you win or lose, or you are successful on game day, or than it was when you coached college Division I level?
No, you know what? I do reflect on this because sometimes I get stressed and my wife will say, well, you know, you can just do less football. And it took me a while to figure out, like, I told her, like, I can't do less. Like, I don't want to lose. And I want to give these kids every opportunity to win and be successful. Like, I just can't, the person that I am, I just can't do less than I'm doing, you know? And so, you know, that is the same way I felt in college. Now it's just different because that's only myself with putting the pressure on me. I think the difference in college is you feel the pressure from all these other places. Most notably the head coach, right? Who, unless you're at Alabama, right? Like, your head coach is maybe trying to, you know, get some better job where he can make more money and inevitably you can make more money, I guess. Right. And, you know, da 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 da, right? Moving up the food chain, right? So you feel the pressure of that, you know, on top of your own, you know, desire to be successful.
I like how you point out Alabama is the place where the people would be less worried about that.
Hey, well, you know, Saban, he just always seems so relaxed.
Yeah, he does seem kind.
No, but I mean, I guess just, I mean, I, you know, you're at Fordham, you're at Central Connecticut, you're at wherever, like, the person that's working there is hoping to get a different job, like a better job, even though in my mind, that's a great job. Like, the person is not looking at this like, all right, I'm good, I'm set. So there's that pressure, which I think, you know, you add that, and you add that to, like I said, your own desire to be successful, I think. So that it is different, but my own my own kind of will to win, if you will, is the same. Like I want to win, but when I'm able to take, you know, the other kind of piece off my shoulders and like my kids can run out onto the field after the game, like I'm over it faster. It doesn't sit with me as long. And luckily we haven't lost a lot. So that helps too. But I don't know if that kind of answers your question. So I definitely still want to win, but I don't feel quite as much pressure to.
Yeah. And I actually thought about this when, you know, taking on Verified and starting to try to give advice to athletes. I think one of the things that athletes are not looking for when they're trying to pick a school that they should be is there are coaches all along this spectrum and other spectrums, I think, as well. And if you're the athlete that is not going to respond well to a certain type of coaching, then don't go to a place where that's the way that coach coaches, right?
Right.
And like right. you might go someplace and end up with a different coach there. Like those things do happen. They happen all the time. But don't like go in like to a place where it's set up for you to not be successful and to not fit in well with the culture.
Right. Absolutely. Go and watch a practice. Like go and watch a game. Like, you know, and you're going to see.
Yeah.
You know, like you're not going to buy a car without test driving. You know, like you want to go and do those things and see if that's something that jives with you and how you are.
Yeah. And then before I let you go, any last words on advice or thoughts that you would want to impart on athletes or their families that are going through the recruiting process?
I guess the only kind of last thing that I would say is, you know, when you're in the recruiting process, always, you know, don't forget that the people that are on the other side, whether they're good people or bad people, they're professionals in what they're doing. And they have a lot more information about the recruiting process than you do. And, you know, in some ways that kind of sets you off, that kind of creates an imbalance of power. But what I think is important for families to remember is that you have more information about yourself. So that's like how you take kind of some of that power back. And, you know, it's good to sell yourself. It's good to kind of, if you think you want to keep some information to yourself, then keep it to yourself. I'm not saying to be dishonest, but I'm just saying, you know, you're getting recruited by these schools and you're not sure if you want to tell and da, da, da. Like, that's okay. You know, colleges have information that they're going to share with you, and they have information that they're not. And when you're on the other side, you should look at your information the same way. Like, that's a valuable commodity, and think about how you're going to share that with the school to help put yourself in the best situation.
Well, great. Thanks so much, Tim. And we'll catch up again soon.
Absolutely. Thanks, Nate.
Good luck this year or the rest Thanks. Of the year. Bye.
All right.
That was fun. I miss coaching with Tim. Outside of game day, he's so level-headed that it always surprised me how animated he got during the games. You can know someone for a long time, but having him on the podcast gave me a chance to pick his brain on things that we just normally wouldn't talk about, so really like that. Thanks for listening, and if you find our content valuable, please consider donating on our Patreon page at patreon.com/verifiedathletics. You can also support us by sharing this podcast with people you know. His support from listeners like you that make it possible to continue to provide helpful and free content to all of our listeners. See you next time.